uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
Edition of the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. This is the Thursday Night Moonbat Show, live here with you tonight, and we're going to be getting into lots of news and information, various topics of discussion with you here on the show tonight. Glad you could join us and stay up late with us here for another live edition of the broadcast. We'd love to hear from you with emails if you have topics of discussion that you'd like to hear me talk about. I always like when people do that, and I really encourage more of that. I think it makes the show a lot more interesting when we have people, you know, bring stuff up that I can sort of riff on. So globalrealityshow@gmail.com is the email address for the show, globalrealityshow@gmail.com. So if you'd like to email anything during the broadcast tonight that you would like to have me discuss or talk about, that's how you can do it, globalrealityshow@gmail.com. My website where this broadcast originates from, of course, is theglobalreality.com, and you can go there to find the chat room, which is interactive with other people who are listening to the show live. There's people in there right now tonight, so you can go in there and hang out with them. There's also all kinds of stuff up there, the website, the links to listen to the show live, archive shows, video clips from different past radio shows that have been put on YouTube. Those are up there as well under their own tab, at under the video clips tab there. At the website. Also, my documentary films are up there as well that you can watch. All the documentaries I've released up to this point are all up there. You can watch those, even the mini films and stuff that we've done. You can also get copies of my previous films up there as well. 9/11, New World Rising, Secret Riot Volume 1. Those are always up there available for your purchase. If you want hard copies of those, that's where you can get those at. And we also have music CDs up there for sale. We have all kinds of stuff at the website, theglobalreality.com. So definitely check it out and let people know that that's where you come to hear this show and other things that we play here and talk about and discuss. So we'll be getting into all those tonight. And again, love to have your emails and any participation that you would like to input in would be great. So there you go. Let's see, where do we want to start tonight? I don't know. That's, I don't have any specific topics to get into tonight. I don't really have a lot of material. There was the news has been, I don't know, it's been strange. In the past several weeks, there's been, the news cycles have been really strange, and everything's, all the resources are being put on paying attention to what's going on in Egypt and the rest of this stuff. We have to wonder why, and I think we know why. I think it's because, well, there's, you know, there's something's going on. Something's activating on this planet. Ancient archaeological discovery, something of that nature. I don't know. But something feels like it's activating. And so the news is, there's just a bit of, and I don't really have any other topics or and whatnot to get into and discuss with you here tonight. So, yeah, any questions you guys might have or anything in the chat room as well that you'd like to throw out there that you might want to hear me talk about, you can throw it in the chat room and I can talk about it. Try to do it there. It's best if you do email, cause I don't look at the chat very much, but I'm just putting it out there. Let's see. All right. Well, I guess nobody has anything specific they want to talk about tonight. So I'm just going to jump right into, in news and information here. Let's start out with this one. Mississippi group proposes license plate to honor KKK leader. American African leaders have rejected with shock at a plan to feature an early Ku Klux Klan leader on Mississippi license plates. The proposal by the Mississippi Division of the Sons of Confederate Veterans asked the state to issue a series of license plates between now and 2015 to honor the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. A 2014 plate would feature Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest, who became an important leader of the Klan after the war. Forrest was most known for directing a massacre of black Union soldiers who had already laid down their arms at Fort Pillow in April 1864. It is in connection with one of the most atrocious and cold-blooded massacres that ever disgraced civilized warfare. That is, I love that, civilized warfare. Yeah, warfare's, that just disgusts me, that even that term of that, civilized warfare. Warfare is never civilized. And that his name will forever be inseparably associated with, according to the obituary published by the New York Times at his death in 1877. And following the war, Forrest worked to bring disparate Klan groups under a centralized authority. He was eventually elected Grand Wizard. He was also a entered apprentice at the Ongarona Lodge number 168 in Memphis, Tennessee. They don't mention that in the article there, but it's a fact. And what's interesting is that he never finished his teachings, and he never went through all the degrees. He left, and most likely what happens is, and if you don't reach the third degree in the Blue Lodge to become Master Mason, they don't technically consider you a Freemason. That's a fact. And so we've seen other cases of this with other people who have gone through, you know, certain degrees and then stopped and not made it the rest of the way. I think George Washington is one that comes to mind for sure that did that. But we know that the story of this is generally when they don't complete the Master Mason degree, that means that they are going up to a much higher organization. In this case, because of the connection we already know with Nathan Bedford Forrest and Albert Pike and the Jesuit order, that the only place that someone who did not finish their Masonry degrees would go would be up to the Illuminati itself. So, so it's very interesting stuff there. And so they're trying to get, old him. I mean, why not? I mean, this stuff about he was a Klan, the Klan guy and all this stuff. Well, you know what? Look, we already got a bunch of white slave-owning, racist bastards on all our money anyway, in everything else. So what's it going to hurt to put this guy on a license plate? I mean, fuck, everything look around. Look at your currency. Look at everything. I mean, you got white racist slave owners on everything. I mean, what's it going to hurt to have another one, right? But my point is that they never point out the things that really give you why this story about Nathan Bedford Forrest on a license plate is important. It's important because it shows you that the people that they always tend to remember and memorialize through history are always the ones that are associated with secret societies and associated with these different groups, which again trace back to the Vatican and the Jesuit order and secretive religious groups. These are always the people they try to name in history, and the people who attempt to fight that, they do their best to make sure nobody remembers their names, don't they? That's how these guys roll. Anyway, let's continue on here with the news tonight. Lots of dirty rumors flying around in Egypt right now. Rumors going around that Mubarak was supposed to resign last night. Now they're saying he's supposed to resign by morning. He's saying he's not going to resign until September. There's all kinds of stuff going around. People are just floating lies everywhere. Saw this one tonight. This one from businessinsider.com from some person named Joe Weisenthal. I don't know whether this is True, not true, verified or not. I'll give you my first inclination. My first feeling about this tells me that this is more propaganda to essentially cause the decision of Mubarak to go one way or the other. I think that's what they're trying to do here. They're trying to take some of the heat off. But anyway, it says that there is an unconfirmed report going around that Saudi King Abdullah has died. Reports say the Saudi government is denying this. It just hit the internet. We don't know if it's true. It's on Islam Times, and frankly, it doesn't read credibly because it ties his death to discussions about Egypt. Needless to say, were it true, it would only further concerns about Mideast stability at an already fragile time. Oil prices originally jumped on the news. I would find it very interesting if this was true, considering that story we covered last night. I guess it was about they're conveniently saying now that peak oil could hit Saudi Arabia in when? Oh, I didn't catch it the first time. When are they saying peak oil could hit Saudi Arabia? When was that? One more time for those sitting in the cheap seats in the back. When was it? 2012. So this rumor floats around the day after we find out that Saudi Arabia may run out of oil in 2012. That's the new thing going around now. And this was not a conspiracy theory. This was actually mainstream news. I reported it yesterday on the show. I can't remember what source it was from or what. You go back and listen to yesterday's show and hear that me talk about that story. But so, yeah, I mean, I find it highly interesting that you know, this would happen right as, you know, they're all this scaremongering about Saudi running out of oil. More Middle East turmoil is what they're trying to really cause. Order out of chaos. Oil prices originally jumped on the news, but then faded, perhaps indicating the market's disbelief in the rumor. The full report says Saudi Arabia's 86-year-old King Abdullah was discharged from a New York City hospital in good health after going through two back operations in December 2010, the king delegated the management of the affairs of the world's largest oil supply to his half-brother, Crown Prince Sultan bin Abdulaziz, during his presence. King Abdullah talked with Obama about the situation in Egypt over the phone yesterday, and Obama and the king got into a heated debate about their opinions of what Hosseini Mubarak should do. After the phone call, sources stated that King Abdullah was furious and he suffered a sudden heart attack. Oh, my God. So they're saying he, oh, Jesus Christ, wouldn't that be something? This is probably all bullshit, but it wouldn't that be something, though, if it wasn't. But Bart drops dead of a heart attack minutes after getting off the phone, having a heated debate with Barack Obama. Ugh. Oh, man. Ooh, damn, y'all. You better hope this shit ain't true. Because if it is, it's going to get interesting real quick. Get a helmet, man. It's probably bullshit, but if it's not, yeah. Whoo, get a napkin and a fork and a knife and a spoon and dig in. Doctors ran to his rescue but were unable to save him. He was pronounced dead, but then his death was not reported due to the sensitive conditions that exist in the region. Well, that wouldn't surprise me either. These motherfuckers do this kind of stuff. Who was it? They had, I mean, there's been several of these guys they've had on ice for a long time and rolled them out and then, oh yeah, so-and-so dead. And they were dead for a long time before that. That wouldn't surprise me the least bit. The CIA is well known for doing that. They'll off somebody, keep them on ice and make people believe that person's still alive. And the next thing you know, when it fits their agenda better, then they'll announce that person's dead. A lot of people believe Kim Jong-il's been dead for years. A lot of people believe Castro's been dead for years. Osama bin Laden has been dead for years. I mean, they just move around these boogeymen, dead men everywhere on the board they want to, like it's a goddamn chess piece, and go on about their business. So yeah, that's a hell of a story there. Yeah, boy, we'll have to keep. Well, let's just do a live search here. Let's see if there's anything going around about it. Let's see. Abdullah dead. Let's see what we come up with. No, Fourth article down says Saudi Arabia denies King Abdullah's death. Alex Jones, Infowars.com. Well, it must be nice to be able to get your. How mainstream are you? You can just get some stupid random article about them denying. All it says is Saudi Arabia denies King Abdullah's death, and it gets to be number five. Infowars.com. Wow. And you know how you can get that. You know all you got to do is pay for it, right? You know that, right? Yeah, I could get any of my web address. And the cool thing about it for me is my, if you type Josh Reeves, you don't have to type anything else. You type Josh Reeves now into Google, first thing comes up is the my website, theglobalreality.com. That's pretty cool. Out of all the Josh Reeveses in the world, type mine, my website's the first thing that comes up. That's, you can't pay for that. But you can pay to have your stuff bumped up in the rankings. I've seen it offered on some of the hosting packages that I've bought before for my stuff. That's how I know it's true. Anyway, let's continue on here tonight. Love to hear from you. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. That's GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. You can email into the show and we can discuss anything you would like to discuss here on the show tonight. Continuing on here with the news. Group plans to beam free internet across the globe from space. We've talked about here, there's got to be, and we know that there are, people that are pulling together contingencies for when they get ready to do with the away with the free existing internet, to have an underground internet. And I'm sure that's probably what we're going to be doing our show on one day here. We'll probably be doing our show under the radar on some free internet when they close everything else down. Because that's where people are going to flock to anyway. People aren't going to want this government mandated shit. They're going to want the underground shit. They always do. The charity group A Human Right says it was planning to purchase a satellite that would provide free basic internet access to developing countries around the world. The group, which was founded by 25-year-old Costa Grammatis, is currently raising money to buy the TerraStar 1, the largest commercial communication satellite ever built. TerraStar, the company that owns the satellite, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in October 2010, opening the possibility that the satellite may be up for sale. The group hopes to raise $150,000 to finalize a business plan, investigate legal and business aspects of submitting a bid for the satellite, and hire engineers to turn the plan into a reality. After this initial phase, the group plans to develop an open-source, low-cost modem that would be used to connect to the satellite and finalize plans with partner governments. We believe that internet access is a tool that allows people to help themselves, a tool so vital that it should be considered a universal human right. The website for Buy This Satellite stated, "Imagine your digital life disconnected." $150,000 for a satellite? Shit. Hey, anybody got 150 grand I can borrow? I'll buy a fucking satellite and just beam my show on this thing. 24 hours of fucking day. Boy, that'd piss them off, wouldn't it? SEC'd be shooting fucking missiles at that thing. Blow it up. Nearly 5 billion of the world's 6.9 billion people don't have access to the internet. A Human Right plans to finance their satellite by allowing telecommunication companies to purchase bandwidth by providing basic service for free to anyone. Our goal is not only to get everyone online, but also facilitate the growth of an industry. So, yeah, I mean, I've thought about that. I thought maybe if there might be, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of those. There's going to be, underground internets and people going back and using 56K and shit and having, because there's all kinds of that shit now. It's been around. I mean, the internet already has an underground to it. It's always had an underground to it, and it's always been filled by, techies and hackers and, code monkeys and everything else. I mean, still to this day, if you want to download stuff, the big secret for downloading stuff isn't torrents or any of that shit. It's fucking news groups, man. You can get it, pay for news groups access, and that's where the fucking shit is, man. You can get anything on news groups. I'm not going to tell you how to do it though, because it's not real easy, but you can figure it out. But yeah, news groups, that's where it's at for downloading stuff. Always has been. Fuck all this, torrent shit. Scientology airs ad on NBC after damaging New Yorker profile. The Church of Scientology has been airing a new ad on NBC the same week the New Yorker writer Lawrence Wright published a lengthy feature story that accuses the religion's founder of doctoring his war history while revealing that the FBI is investigating the church for alleged human trafficking abuses. The ad claims that the church is helping people understand psychiatric abuse, among other things, and ends with the slogan, "Our help is yours." And I love this, man. The Vatican doesn't go running commercials every time something is, demeaning to their public view. You know what I mean? To their image. Every goddamn time something comes out about Scientology, what is their answer to it? They spend millions and millions and millions of dollars running commercials or paying people, to shut down people's websites and stuff. They do that. Scientologists, man, those fucking guys are powerful. They have all the sanction of the priest class, dude. They have all the sanction of the mystery religions. That's what the connection to, Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard and Crowley and that whole thing. That's what the importance of that whole issue is that it proves that there is a direct connection between Scientology and the priest class and the people that are using these sacred magical practices for their own purposes and for evil instead of good. And that, again, was, once with the formation of the Vatican and the priest class power structure, that's what you had, the absorption of all of these ancient things taken into one, and it became a large part of the agenda. And that's what they're using, and I think that's what they're going to use. I think that's what all this ancient alien stuff is about and all this V stuff. I think they're programming us and acclimating us and getting us ready to essentially, because we've already seen it. We've seen people losing interest and losing faith in religion. We've seen people losing faith and losing interest in science and see that both are dogmas of their own. And we've seen examples of this in the news and little things that they're starting to roll out more and more, little hints they're dropping in movies and whatnot. Nicolas Cage movie, The Knowing, they did that. Angels and Demons, they did that, dropped that in there, the science versus religion thing. And to me, Scientology is the perfect one world religion because it shows how all the other religious texts are based on extraterrestrials. And it really justifies all the other religions in a way. It shows that, okay, these other religions weren't necessarily wrong, but they were talking about, Thetans and Xenu and all this stuff. It all relates to this. It's blah, 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 science, and this ties into it too. You see, there's a perfect way for them to justify that. I think that's why they've allowed them to start talking about the Anunnaki and all this stuff on ancient aliens. I think that's what it's about, me personally. I really do. I really think that's why they've been pushing it with, movie stars and film stars. I think that's the whole reason behind it, is because that's what they're acclimating to. If you were going to try and get a world religion on everybody in the world, the first thing you would want to do is get the popular people of the world into it. They tried doing it a little bit a few years ago. They tried it with Kabbalah first. They thought people were going to buy into it with Britney and Madonna and the whole Kabbalah thing. And what they were into wasn't even real Kabbalah anyway. It was this Christian-based, Americanized Kabbalah. It has nothing to do with the actual book of the Kabbalah. Don't confuse those two things. It's not even nearly the same. But the point is that they tried it with that and it didn't work. And now Scientology is their trump card. And so what they're doing is they're basically having a fallout with the existing infrastructure, all by design, and the existing infrastructure of Scientology by making them, appear to have connections with scandals and all this stuff. Oh, they're human trafficking. Oh, they're abusers. And see, what they're doing is they're creating this scandal in the eye of the public so they can let it all play out, squash it, appear to get rid of those people that are like that, and then say, okay, we've gotten the bad guys out of Scientology. It's not that way anymore. Everybody can be quiet about it now. We've got that. We're going to go on about our business. And then nothing will ever have to be brought up again, because anytime anybody brings up, oh, the Scientologist says, no, that's actually not true. You know, they got those people out and they've moved past that now. You see, this is how they're trying to legitimize it to people. I see the legitimizing of the attempt to legitimize Scientology. It's a massive operation. They're putting millions and millions of dollars behind it. And, you know, L. Ron Hubbard himself said, if you want to make a bunch of money real quick, start a religion. And he was a science fiction writer. I mean, really. Now, that's not to say that that is impossible, that some of the stuff that he talks about isn't true. I'm not saying it's not. Some of it very well could be true. But the fact of the matter is, it's just like theosophy. You know, L. Ron Hubbard may have not even intended for, he may have started, you know, Scientology as a joke for all we know. You know, especially with that statement. I mean, we don't know what his intent was. He's been dead for a long time. And the same thing they did to Blavatsky. After Blavatsky died, you had the people who came after her and then the people who started the American branch changed theosophy and changed the description of what the definitions of it were to fit whoever was in charge of it at that time. And that's why people get so confused now on what theosophy represents and who is into it and what it represents now. And everybody always blames Helena Blavatsky because she created it. No one ever seems to blame the 3, 4, and 5 other regimes of people who took over it long after she was dead and then said, well, that was what, you know, theosophy represented. Now in this age, what it represents is this, that, and the other. And that's what they do. They just change it. But what they tell the public is that the current theosophy is the same as it was in Blavatsky's day, and that's simply not true. And I think that's the same thing that's probably to be said about Scientology. I mean, for all we know, L. Ron Hubbard created it as a joke. You know, he said, hey, you know, you want to make a bunch of money real quick, start a religion. You know, he could have just started it as a joke or as something that was supposed to be for, you know, certain initiates or certain people. And now with what it's become, which is a complete, I mean, my God, they moved their, didn't they, after his death, they moved their headquarters to Rome? To, you know, not far from the Vatican? So, I mean, it's a very real probability that once Scientology became absorbed with the priest class, this is when you started to see them be used as a tool for the one world religious system. And the interesting connection there with Scientology members and L. Ron Hubbard's work with Phyllis Schlafly, Beverly LaHaye, how they got this pro-evolution textbooks out of the schools in California and had it replaced with L. Ron Hubbard's work. That's a fact. So another interesting connection there with bloodlines, with the mystery religions, with, you know, with Schlafly, with the secret religious orders. Interesting stuff. All right, globalrealityshow@gmail.com. If you want to email me a question or a topic you'd like to hear me talk about tonight on this Thursday night Moonbat show, Thursday night going into Friday here live with you tonight, 12:53 a.m. Central Standard Time. All right, we're going to take a break. Global Reality, stay with us. Back here with you on the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thank you for being with us tonight for this Moonbat edition of the broadcast. Late night show here for you. And we're glad you could join us and be with us here tonight. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com is my email address. If you'd like to email anything into the broadcast tonight to have me discuss, talk about, if you've got a topic, if you've got something that you would like to hear me talk about, then I would love to get into it, but nonetheless, I haven't gotten emails in tonight, but we have gotten some good ones lately, so If you got more, I was talking to the folks in the chat room there during the break, and Chamber 777 said that we talked about Scientology in the last segment. And I went and did a YouTube search of this for this thing, the e-meter that the Scientologists use to allegedly tell if you have, you know, how many dead alien souls you have in you that are causing your misery, because that's what they believe. And you pay them millions of dollars and, you know, you become an indentured servant, and they promise you to cleanse these from you. But anyway, yeah, I found those videos. I'll watch those later. He was saying basically they're a fucking lie detector. And yeah, I'm looking at some of the stills here on some of the videos. Yeah, it looks like a polygraph machine. I mean, it's ridiculous. Chamber there in the chat room said that, yeah, he agreed that, Hubbard was probably just, you know, dicking around. And yeah, I think a lot of evidence points in that direction, you know. I think it really does, especially when what we've seen happen with other religions. I mean, my God, Buddha, Christ, I mean, on and on. Things weren't started on these religions until years and 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 years after their deaths. So, you know, that's what they love to do. They take people who have, sometimes, you know, essentially good ideologies. And then once the creator is dead and gone and can't defend their ideology anymore, they take it and just use it for whatever globalist agenda they see fit. That's what they've done with essentially every religion in every secret society. They've done that with two, every one of them. They do it with everything. Anything that starts by the people, they attempt to co-opt and steer back into their grid. And that's what, you know, and because that's true, that's why you see people like Alex Jones try to trick people into believing that that's what the Council for National Policy is. You notice how Jones tries that? He's tried it a few times. I know you guys have heard it on his clips from his show, where he'll say, oh, well, the Hunt started it, and then it got, you know, started out as a, he said that. I mean, we have a clip of him saying that. I have a clip from him from his show saying that. You know, it started out as a good group with conservative values, and they got hijacked. And because that is true, and what's interesting about that is the people who, he doesn't tell you who runs that modus operandi 99.9% of the time, and who does run that is the priest class. You understand? The religion, the religious controllers, that's who runs that operation. But he leaves that out. And then tries to say that that's the case with the Council for National Policy when that's anything but the case with them. That group was started from the top. It was started as a group for people who were on the top, and as most secret societies and most of these groups are, as also as a way to bring new people into the club and to bring, you know, the young ones, the younger generation in. And, you know, that's how they bring them in. And they wine them and they dine them and they, you know, give them, exclusive access to things that people outside can't hear them talk about. And they're predominantly white, with the exception of whatever porch black they allow to be in that week. Alan Keyes is their favorite porch black. Of course, he's pretty much a card-carrying socialist. His roommate in college, of course, Bill Kristol. But I'll tell you this, when I was at the Freedom 21 conference in 2008 with, Phyllis Schlafly was there, Corsi was there, Dr. Michael Kaufman, former head of the CMP, was there, Larry Pratt was there. Some of that footage was in Secret Right Volume 1. DeWeese was there, you know, it was who's who. And that was what's interesting about it. It was that, everybody who was in attendance at this thing was white. There was not a person of color to be seen anywhere near that place. I mean, it was like, I remember feeling the time, even though I didn't know as much about this stuff now, I'd only been on the trail of the CMP, about a year at the time. But it did kind of feel like a Klan rally a bit to me, you know? And I started thinking about this recently, and it didn't even dawn on me at the time. But last year when I had these, whatever these guys were, posing as state troopers, visit my former residence, I had completely forgotten that when we went to that conference in 2008, you had to fill out these things with your address and stuff and your name on it so they could give you name badges at the event. I completely forgot about that. Because at the time, I wasn't actually living at that address, and then I was living at that address later. And boy, I completely forgot about it. That's probably what it was. This fucker's had my name and my address and everything, and all my information down in their books when I went to that conference. That's probably what it was. Glad it was. That makes sense now. I didn't even think about that. I mean, you know, they always know where you're at. I mean, shit. I lived in that same place for 7 years. They wanted to come get me before then. They could have. They waited till the day I was out. I moved out. Whatever. You know, but then again, that may have been very, very much where that came from. Was that, you know, but, yeah, interesting stuff, but nonetheless, we're going to get back into some more of the news tonight here on the show. Please support us if you can. The Chipping Banner is there for the bills and for, all of the, various expenses that we recruit here, every month running the network. With the streams, and we're also in the process of starting our new website that we have. We're going to be getting that going real soon. Infotainmentcomplex.com. That's going to be up and running real soon. So the Chipping Banner is there for that. The donate button is there for the films and people who want to donate to help us get out the Secret Volume 2 and other films like that. So larger amounts that you want to use for non-bill purposes that you want to go towards the films, make sure you use the donate button and not the Chipping Banner, okay? Because it's two different things. Because then if we get something in that's meant for the films, then we have to start another Chipping Banner because somebody wanted to donate for the films, not the bills, and then we run short on what we need for the month from bills because of the other Chipping Banner. People see it and they think that it's full and we've met our goal and we haven't because somebody's donated for films in the place for the bills. It's tough to explain, but there it is. Let's spit it all out. So yeah, just use that for those purposes. Anyway, let's get back into more of the news. I didn't know more emails coming in tonight, so I guess nobody else has anything they want to talk about. Let's just dive right into this one. I've been saving this one. This is from Time Magazine, 2045, the year man becomes immortal. And you know who this is features right here on the front of it. Yes, indeed. Mr. Singularity himself, Ray Kurzweil. Standing in front of some kind of theater looking thing with a marquee that says the singularity is near. 2045, Bubba, it's going to be here way before that. Moore's Law has already determined it's going to be here way before that. On February 15th, 1965, a diffident but self-possessed high school student named Raymond Kurzweil appeared as a guest on a game show called I've Got a Secret. He was introduced by the host Steve Allen. Then he played a short musical composition on a piano. The idea was that Kurzweil was hiding an unusual fact, and the panelists, they included a comedian and a former Miss America, had to guess what it was. On the show, the beauty queen did a good job of grilling Kurzweil, but the comedian got the win. The music was composed by a computer. Kurzweil got $200. Kurzweil then demonstrated the computer, which he built himself, a desk-size affair with a loudly clacking relays hooked up to a typewriter. The panelists were pretty blasé about it. They were more impressed by Kurzweil's age than by anything he'd actually done. They were ready to move on to Mr. Chester Looney of Rough and Ready, California, whose secret was that she had been President Lyndon Johnson's first grade teacher. But Kurzweil would spend much of the rest of his career working out what his demonstration meant. Creating a work of art is one of those activities we reserve for humans and humans only. It's an act of self-expression. You're not supposed to be able to do it if you don't have a self. To see creativity, the exclusive domain of humans usurped by a computer built by a 17-year-old, is to watch a line blur that cannot be unblurred. The line between organic intelligence and artificial intelligence. That was Kurzweil's real secret. And back in 1965, nobody guessed it. Maybe not even him, not yet. But now, 46 years later, Kurzweil believes that we're approaching a moment when computers will become intelligent, and not just intelligent, but more intelligent than humans. When that happens, humanity, our bodies, our minds, our civilization will be completely and irreversibly transformed. He believes that this moment is not only inevitable, but imminent. According to his calculations, the end of human civilization as we know it is about 35 years away. Sooner than that, Bubba. Sooner than that. Computers are getting faster. Everybody knows that. Also, computers are getting faster, faster. That is, the rate at which they're getting faster is increasing. So if computers are getting so much faster, so incredibly fast, there might be conceivably come a moment when they are capable of something comparable to human intelligence. Artificial intelligence. All that horsepower could be put in the service of emulating whatever it is our brains are doing when they create consciousness. Not just doing arithmetic very quickly or composing piano music, but also driving cars, writing books, making ethical decisions, appreciating fancy paintings, making witty observations at cocktail parties. If you can swallow that idea, and Kurzweil and a lot of other very smart people can, then all bets are off. From that point on, there's no reason to think that computers would stop getting more powerful. They would keep on developing until they were far more intelligent than we are. Their rate of development would also continue to increase because they would take over their own development from their slower thinking human creators. Imagine a computer scientist that was itself a super intelligent computer. It would work incredibly quickly. It could draw on huge amounts of data effortlessly, and it would even take breaks to play Farmville. Wouldn't even take breaks to play Farmville. Probably it is impossible to predict the behavior of these smarter than human intelligences with which we might one day share the planet, because if you could, you'd be as smart as they would be. But there are a lot of theories about it. Maybe we'll merge with them to become super intelligent cyborgs using computers to extend our intellectual abilities the same way that cars and planes extend our physical abilities. Maybe the artificial intelligences will help us treat the effects of old age and prolong our lifespans indefinitely. Maybe we'll scan our consciousnesses into computers and live inside them as software forever virtually. What did I tell you? That's what they want. I've talked about that extensively. That's what they're going to do. I guarantee you that's how they're going to sell people on saving the planet. The transferring of our consciousness, you know, big farms full of just people's physical bodies in them. The people at the heart of this, folks, have a vested interest in keeping their control over this material realm because it's the only dimension they can control. They have no other control in the other realms. These transhumanists openly talk about being able to create entire replicate human bodies out of machinery, perfectly emulating everything that a human body can do, but what they cannot do and cannot figure out is how to animate that machine. They cannot recreate the soul. And it's very interesting that sort of tie in that connection because in the new V series that is currently airing on ABC, that's one of the things that the reptilians are trying to do in this is they're trying to find what makes up the human soul so they can destroy it because they see that as the biggest threat to their species, the human soul. And it's very interesting because when you really look at it, that's what seems to be a threat to the real people in charge. Interesting that people think they're really reptiles too, isn't it? It's just, you know. Anyway, let's continue here. Maybe the computers will turn on humanity and annihilate us. The one thing that all these theories have in common is the transformation of our species into something that is no longer recognizable as such to humanity circa 2011. Transformation has a name, the singularity. The difficult thing to keep sight of when you're talking about the singularity is that even though it sounds like science fiction, it isn't. No more than a weather forecast is science fiction. It's not a fringe idea. It's a serious hypothesis about the future of life on Earth. There's an intellectual gag reflex that kicks in anytime you try to swallow an idea that involves super intelligent immortal cyborgs, but suppress it if you can. Because while the singularity appears to be, on the face of it, preposterous, it's an idea that rewards sober, careful evaluation. People are spending a lot of money trying to understand it. The 3-year-old Singularity University, which offers interdisciplinary courses for study for graduate students and executives, is hosted by NASA. Google was a founding sponsor. Its CEO and co-founder Larry Page spoke there last year. People are attracted to the singularity for the shock value, like an intellectual freak show. But they stay because there's a bit more to it than they expected. And of course, in the event that it turns out to be real, well, it is real. It's already real. It's already a reality. Give me a fucking break. Do your homework, Time Magazine, please. It will be the most important thing to happen to human beings since the invention of the language. I mean, I cannot make people understand this goddamn singularity thing enough. I've beat people over the head with this transhumanist thing, and it just seems that they don't get it. Folks, you understand that this is where it's going? Humanity, we're the last of a dying breed here, folks. They're trying to systematically make us antiquated. They're going to antiquate us right out of business, and what do you think they're going to do with all of us once they do? Once they don't need us anymore. You know, there's a reason why technology's never been portrayed as something that is, you know, that mankind can just coexist alongside in a utopian world. You know, it's never been portrayed that way in the movies or in science fiction or anything, has it? You know why it hasn't? Because, and this has nothing to do with religious beliefs or anything else, let me make this clear. But humans are imperfect. That was one of the themes in the new Tron movie, you know, and it's true. You are expecting a machine that was built by humans, you know, to allegedly to be able to coexist alongside of us. And we're supposed to just believe that these artificially intelligent computers at some point won't see us as a threat to them. Because undoubtedly, eventually they will. And how could you blame them? We're a threat to them because we have the ability to say, we don't need you anymore, and turn them off. People say, well, you just program them not to do that. Well, if you have self-replicating technology and you have technology which self-replicates itself, you know, in the end times or in the end days, men will seek death but will not find it. These self-replicating machines, you know, once you decide you don't want to be immortal anymore and you'd rather travel to the next plane, you try to kill yourself and you can't because you have self-replicating machines that keep replicating everything back, keeping your body from dying. There are fates worse than death, ladies and gentlemen, in this plane that we exist in. And these people want to make sure that human beings as a species suffer a fate worse than death. That's what kind of sick motherfuckers we're dealing with here. So it's not good enough to just kill us all. It's not good enough just to go through every fucking, you know, because they could have done this a long time ago. This should tell you what kind of evil, sadistic power we are dealing with. And again, I don't necessarily think that all the people in charge are human. I don't know how you can with the evidence we have at this point. But they could have went through every city and country in the world and dropped neutron bombs on us already and wiped us all out, left all the existing infrastructure and buildings, and then moved in by tomorrow morning, came in with the broom and dustpan and sweeped everything up, and been on about their way. But they haven't yet, because they don't just want to kill us. That's not good enough. They want to trap our immortal souls permanently. And they want to keep our souls permanently trapped in this three-dimensional realm. Why? Because they can control this realm. And as many people believe, The people who seeded these bloodlines were cast out of the other dimension, the spiritual world, and cast into this lower plane of vibration, the third dimension. And since they've been cast into this realm, they've essentially done everything to keep it intact. I continue to do everything to keep it intact. I'm having browser malfunctions here, but so just give me a minute. But anyway, I wanted to get back into this article. Peter's doing weird shit tonight. Let's see if we can get this back up. Oh, come on. Here we go. All right. Now it's coming back up. People need to understand, though, this transhumanist thing is not a joke or a possibility or something that they're talking about or something they're thinking about doing or something they may, you know, hem-haw around about. This is going forward, folks. And we are going to have the decision to whether we want to go along with it and have our souls trapped in this three-dimensional realm forever or die. That's going to be our choice. And at the rate it's going now, even most people who would say that they wouldn't go along with it, if they were put to the fire, they would. And that's proof by how quickly we have acquiesced to allowing all this technology to basically wrap around every moment of our waking lives all the time. And we have, all of us. I'm sitting right here in front of you right now, in front of this computer, doing a radio show. So obviously I have too, in a way. It's all degrees and more some than others. The singularity isn't a wholly new idea, just new-ish. In 1965, the British mathematician I.J. Goode described something he called an intelligence explosion. Let an ultra-intelligent machine be defined as a machine that can far surpass all the intellectual activities of any man, however clever. Since the design of machines is one of these intellectual activities, an ultra-intelligent machine could design even better machines. There would then unquestionably be an intelligence explosion, and the intelligence of man would be left far behind. Thus, the first ultra-intelligent machine is the last invention that man need ever make. The word singularity is borrowed from astrophysics. It refers to a point in space-time, for example, inside a black hole, at which the rules of ordinary physics do not apply. In the 1980s, the science fiction novelist Werner Vinge attached it to Goode's intelligence explosion scenario. At a NASA symposium in 1993, Vinge announced that within 30 years, we will have the technological means to create super intelligent human intelligence. Shortly after, the human era will be ended. By that time, Kurzweil was thinking about the singularity too. He'd been busy since his appearance on I've Got a Secret. He'd made several fortunes as an engineer and inventor. He founded and then sold his first software company while he was still at MIT. He went on to build the first print-to-speech reading machine for the blind. Stevie Wonder was customer number one and made innovations in a range of technical fields, including music synthesizers, and speech recognition. Yeah, he invented the Kurzweil synthesizer, one of the most expensive synthesizers that they make, because he was one of the first guys that got, you know, the replicating actual samples, which is totally against, which is interesting in the history of synthesizers, and it's something I know a lot about. That's the antithesis, and go figure, huh? That would have came from a transhumanist. It was the antithesis of what synthesizers were originally created for. When Bob Moog created the first Moog synthesizer, his intent and purpose was to create an instrument that would produce new sounds. Sounds that weren't created from regular everyday acoustical instruments. But what did it evolve into? It evolved into not creating new sounds, but it evolved into just sampling and recreating acoustic pianos, acoustic guitars, you know, live, real instruments. And now it's gravitated back towards, people have now figured out that now that electronic music has become a permanent fixture in the musical landscape, and it has, and I'm glad that it has. It's a good thing. I don't see the rise of electronic music as a threat to other types of music, because of what it's going to do, because it's not going away. Electronic music is going to be here forever now at this point, in various forms and fashions and whatever new things it turns into this week or this month or this year or whatever. But it's a good thing, because of what it does. It inherently pushes people back to, you know, actually playing instruments, drums and guitar and pianos and bass and stuff like that, real actual instruments. Because after a while, most people get tired of that. And they want the real deal, and so it always pushes it back. So as that becoming a permanent fixture, it does tend to gravitate people back towards that. But that's interesting that there, with the rise in technology, we've seen this rise in electronic music. And I love electronic music. If it's made with, you know, the real deal, if it's made with real deal analog circuitry and analog voltage control oscillators and all that stuff. And I'm working on a lot of that type of stuff, really awesome type of music for, the Secret Right Volume 2. That's what I'm working on. It's going to be really good. I've got some really awesome sounding stuff like that, but I just find it an interesting correlation that, it would have been Kurzweil who was responsible for taking synthesizers in the opposite way that they were supposed to, evolve. And I think that that is a part of the transhumanist thing, you know. Why do you need, you know, an 8-foot concert grand, you know, a Bechstein or a Steinway or something? Why do you need that when you've got the perfect digital sample of a Steinway right here in a plastic box that, you know, weighs less than 100 pounds or weighs 10 pounds, you know? Or is on a disc that can be played on your computer from a MIDI keyboard. You know, we have that now. I mean, I can pull up the best grand piano sound on the planet right now on my computer and play it and record it, and you'll think it's a grand piano. And again, you know, if we have a digital replica of it, then we don't need the real thing. I don't like that mentality towards music. And I certainly don't like that mentality towards people. But you see, as in the microcosm, so in the macrocosm, as above, so below, it's the same thing. So what they started out doing to music and what they've now done to music is a microcosm for what they want to do macrocosmically now to you and I and to humanity as a whole. And see, we can prove that. We can prove that they did that. But I love it now because there's, you know, the analog revolution's going on. Everybody's scrambling back to get the old analog stuff because they figured out you just can't replicate that sound. You just can't replicate it with digital. It just doesn't have the same sound to it. It's not as warm. It's not as thick. We're going to have some real deal analog stuff in the new film. You'll hear the difference immediately, I promise you, when you hear the tracks off this. We're going to be releasing a... it's the first time I've announced this, but I'm going to be releasing a a companion soundtrack for The Secret Rite, Volume 2. I think it'll probably have some of the stuff from Volume 1 on there as well. A lot of people liked the music on that and had requested that. So I'm going to be putting out a soundtrack that we're going to have separately. It's going to be an FML release. We'll have a second, it'll be the soundtrack for The Secret Rite. It'll have all the music and stuff that I've composed for the films, The Secret Rite Volume 1 and 2. And we'll have that out. And everybody who has pre-ordered copies of The Secret Rite Volume 2 is going to get a copy of the soundtrack CD, which will be sold separately to everybody else once the film is out. Everybody who pre-ordered is going to get a copy of that for free. So there you go. Let's continue on here. Kurzweil was also pursuing a parallel career as a futurist. He's been publishing his thoughts about the future of human and machine kind for 20 years, most recently in The Singularity Is Near, which was a bestseller when it came out in 2005. A documentary by the same name starring Kurzweil, Tony Robbins, and Alan Dershowitz, among others, was released in January. I got to find that. What's it called? The Singularity Is Near. I'm going to have to find that and watch that. Kurzweil is actually the subject of two current documentaries. The other one, less authorized but more informative, is called The Transcendent Man. Bill Gates has called him the best person I know at predicting the future of artificial intelligence. In real life, the Transcendent Man is an unimposing figure who could pass for Woody Allen's even nerdier younger brother. And this goes on and on and on and on. And this is, God, this thing, I was going to read this whole thing. I really had planned on reading this whole thing, but folks, it's five fucking pages, man. I'm barely through page two of this. I'm going to be reading this shit till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning if I keep it up at this rate. I can't do it. But you can read it yourself. Time Magazine, 2045, The Year Man Becomes Immortal. I highly suggest you read the rest of it on your own time and check that out.
Just because something is electronic music doesn't mean it has to be trance or techno. None of the stuff that I have in my new film is trance or techno. Why is it that there's this misconception where you think just because something is electronic that it has to be techno or trance? That kind of bothers me a bit. None of my stuff, I'm not into that kind of music, but you can still create beautiful music and create great things on a synthesizer, and it's electronic music. It doesn't mean it's trance or techno or something like that of that nature. I don't do dance music. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Because I'll tell you this, when you play an analog synthesizer, it's not like, you can be the best piano player in the world, but that all goes out the window when you get in front of a real analog synthesizer, because you've got to know a thing or two about analog synthesis to be able to even get a sound out of the thing. That's what I love about them. It's not just presets and you go, oh, play a piano sound or something. No, that's not how it works. You have to know how to run what filter where and how much voltage you're putting through it. It's great. It's very technical. And the slightest little change in wherever you have one of these analog sliders at determines the kind of sound you're going to get. And that's what's great about it, because your sound is being produced from the amount of voltage that is going through the oscillator, and the oscillator, which is actually spinning from electricity, is producing a pitch. And the higher the voltage, the higher the frequency and the pitch is. So, like, for instance, this little analog synthesizer right here I have here, the Roland Jupiter 4. This puppy right here, you have to wait on it to heat up for like 30 minutes before you even play it, because the oscillators won't hold the tune for like 30 minutes. And people notoriously, that's actually how I lucked out when I got this one, because the guys are, oh, it's out of tune, it needs to be tuned, and you have to have it professionally tuned. No, it says in the manual, bucko, because somebody was selling one of these recently on eBay for $4,000. I picked one up on Craigslist for $600. And they're going for $4,000. Mine's in dead mint condition. It's dead mint. This guy thought he was ripping me off too. It was so funny to see the look on this guy's face. He was sending me emails back, and I had just gotten a quote from a guy, a dealer, who had one that wasn't in as good a condition as this one. He was selling for $3,000. And this guy, man, he just really thought he was ripping me off. It was so funny. And I was just sitting there hoping he wasn't going to change his mind, and he didn't. He was like, "Email, you sure, man? you sure you don't want me to hang on to the money? I'm like, no, man, I'm cool with it. Guy has no idea I could turn around and make five times my money on this thing right now. I could turn it in about $3,000 or $4,000 right now, dude. guy totally thought I was, but he thought he was getting one over on me. It was so cute. You should have seen. I mean, the guy drove it basically to my front doorstep in fucking the middle of snowpocalypse. That's how bad this guy wanted to sell it. I mean, I just put an ad out and said I was looking for one. They're totally rare, dude. They're going for like $3,000 on the vintage market. This guy had no idea. But he was just totally happy to take my $600. He thought he was ripping me off. God, it was brutal. It was so funny. It was the other way around, bucko. You know, hey, that's a free market though, right? He was happy with his sale and I was happy with my purchase. So, hey, that's a win-win situation for everybody right there. But no, I mean, Bob Moog, who's the inventor of the Moog synthesizer, and this is, you know, playing into the transhumanist thing, talked about how he talks about how there's a connection with your brain, with the electricity of your brain that works as a circuit. When you put your keys on an analog synthesizer, because it, you know, the electricity and the voltage is going through it, and the sound is determined by the electricity. And he many times, you know, in interviews, he talked about how, you know, it would create this synergy within this circuit with, you know, the human brain and the soul and everything, and how you just don't get that from digital. And I thought that was sort of a very interesting tie-in. And it's true, because you can just be so creative on these things, you know. Yeah, there you go. There's a little taste. I had it plugged into my mixer here. So yeah, there you go. So I mean, you just can't get that sound out of digital. You just can't do it. It's just not the same, man. It just doesn't have that growl to it, that warmth to it, you know? Man, just not the same. Anyway, let's see here. What else we got tonight? This news is ridiculous, as it always is. Oh, this one's interesting. A Fox News insider has said that stuff is just made up. That they just make stuff up over there at Fox News. You know, and what I find interesting about that is that, you know, you got people like Alex Jones, and he does his show over on KLBJ on Sundays, which is a Fox News affiliate. And, you know, Mark Dice goes on Fox and all this stuff. And so what that does now is whenever they, you know, let somebody like Mark Dice or Alex Jones come on there and talk about things that, you know, have some basis in truth, from now on, it'll just be, oh, well, hey, remember that guy that worked for Fox just said they just make stuff up over the fly over there. So that's probably just them making something up again. I just see that as a way that now they can basically try to negate real information further. And with, you know, people like Glenn Beck and Alex Jones, and now they're starting to bring that stuff more and more out on Fox News. It's like they're setting the precedent to go ahead and say, yeah, you know, a lot of people, they just make stuff up over there and put it on the news on Fox. And then, you know, let's say that more of these people start making more appearances on Fox News, and then that's going to change the perception around. And then they're going to think that people who are actually, you know, putting out real information or somehow connected to Fox News, because, oh, hey, that's where they support the conspiracy theories at, you know. Oh, my email logged me out, so I hadn't been able to see. We got any more emails here tonight? Let's check that real quick, shall we? Nope, no more emails here tonight on the show. Okay, well, dag nabbit. any other topics? Anything else anybody needs me to cover tonight? I, you know, I'm just sitting here going, looking at the news. Oh, here's a story. Asteroid has closest near miss with Earth. A small asteroid has made the closest near miss on record after making a sharp turn away from the Earth. Well, this is interesting. How come they didn't talk about this on the 6 o'clock news? It was spotted on Friday by scientists at NASA, who was the meter-wide asteroid called 2011 CQ1, traveling at 5,480 kilometers above the Earth's surface in the region in the mid-Pacific. The previous record holder was a rock that skimmed the Earth by a few hundred kilometers in 2004 called FU-162. The small size of these asteroids mean that Earth's gravitational pull is able to bend their orbit. Don Yeomans from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, said that in the latest case, the asteroid's path was bent by 60 degrees. In an online update, Yeomans and his colleague Paul Chodas explained that prior to the Earth's close approach, the object was in a so-called Apollo-class orbit that was mostly outside the Earth's orbit. Following the close approach, the Earth's gravitational attraction modified the object's orbit to an 10-class orbit. A 10, like, that's interesting, A-T-E-N, a 10-class orbit, or an Apollo-class orbit. That's these names. Why do they have, you know, demigod names for different orbits? Anybody ever ask that question? They added that because of their small size, objects of this size are difficult to discover, but there is likely to be nearly a billion objects of this size and larger in near-Earth space, and one would expect one to strike Earth's atmosphere every few weeks on average. Upon striking the atmosphere, small objects of this size create visually impressive fireball events. Only rarely do even a few small fragments reach the ground. So there's that one. Scientists in Australia say that they are encouraged by initial results of a revolutionary thinking cap that aims to promote creativity by passing low levels of electricity through the brain. The device, which consists of two conductors fastened to the head by a rubber strap, significantly boosted results in a simple arithmetic test, they said, but three times as many people who wore the thinking cap were able to complete the test compared to those who did not use the equipment. Alan Snyder, director of the University of Sydney Center for the Mind, said the device worked by suppressing the left side of the brain associated with knowledge and stimulating the right side linked to creativity. You wouldn't use this to study or to help your memory, Snyder told the AFP. You would use this if you wanted to look at a problem anew. If you wanted to look at the world just briefly with a child's view, if you wanted to look outside the box, he said the goal was to suppress mental templates gathered through life experiences to help users see problems and situations as they really appear, rather than through the prism of earlier knowledge. Snyder, I tell you another way to do that. Take psychedelics. I don't need a fucking thinking cap. Give me fucking 4 grams of what Terrence McKenna referred to as a heroic dose, and we'll be all right. I'll fucking be able to tell you every angle there is possible to look at it. Jesus. I don't need a fucking thinking cap, fool. I got nature's thinking cap, the mushroom cap. That's all I need. Snyder added that the work was inspired by accident victims who experienced a sudden urge in creativity after damaging the left side of their brains. Yeah. That's all we need is just, you know, that's all we need, really, isn't it? We just need some newfangled technology, right? We just need some new man-made technology. And, you know, we'll be able to fix all the problems that we have or, you know, anything that's wrong with, yeah. We're just waiting on them folks to invent the next invention, and then we're going to be smarter. And after we get that there thinking cap, we ain't going to be toothless hillbillies no more, by God. Understand me? Unbelievable. Anyway, all right, folks. Donations this week have been abysmal. Mud Puppy can't do it all. You guys have a good one. We'll see you next time. Take care.